Well, this morning we're talking with Clay Belcher of Atlantic, and Clay is he was a Marine back in the day. Clay, when did you enlist? And you did enlist.
June 20th, 1942.
And you chose to enlist. Why?
Why? I had a nephew that he was a lot older than me, but he was in the Marine Corps. He was discharged at that time. And so I always thought it would be a pretty good branch of the service. They're a rough outfit, but anyway, I joined them and wound up on June 20th, 1942. And so I never regretted it. It's just something for me to look forward to, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a lot of guys enlisted back then, those who weren't drafted, enlisted back then during World War II. A lot of guys felt the call to get out there and be in front of this and protect the country.
Well, that's about the way I was. I was working on a government hospital down in Clarksville, Tennessee, and a company out of Chicago had the contract for the hospital area, and I was working there. They put me in 1A, and I went home and joined the Marine Corps the very next day.
Well, can we let's talk a little bit about your service, because you were involved in the Marine Corps for, well, I guess I should ask you, how long were you there?
3 years, 5 months, and 18 days.
And you've been asked that a lot, I'm sure, over the years, and always the same answer. But you were put in some pretty tough situations right away.
Yeah, I was stationed at San Diego Marine Base, and I was there for a year and a half, and I helped train the division that I was assigned to on Iwo Jima. Mm-hmm. I helped train them and then joined them in Hilo, Hawaii. And then from there we went aboard ship and wound up on Iwo Jima. Mm-hmm.
So you were you were pretty quickly thrown into some pretty tough combat situations.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. You just don't realize what it is unless you've been there. That way you know what's going on. And I still dream about it. I used to dream every night. Gee, it just, I don't know, just my legs get cramped in my right leg where I got shot, and I'd get up and try to walk it off, at night, and so I guess you just have to do the best you can.
Well, as you mentioned, you were wounded. You remember the day very well?
Yes, I remember. Yeah, we had the Japs we had them in a pocket on the front, on the north end of Iwo Jima, and they was throwing everything they had at us, because we had them in a trap, and I got shot and went through my pelvis and out the back. And I'd had the shrapnel, as I said, a day before. And we didn't have any corpsmen left at that time because we lost so many guys. And so I just stayed out up there. I could have got off, went back, but hit with that shrapnel. But I just stayed up there with my men. And I didn't get shot till the next afternoon. But anyway, that's a lot of memories, I tell you.
Well, and it sounded like your unit took some pretty decent casualties there, too. It sounded like there were quite a few guys who struggled there.
That was our second trip up there. Really? The first time, we was up there 13 days and nights, and we was carrying supplies up to the front lines. Mm-hmm. And then we went on the front lines that time. We carried supplies up about 5 days. The rest of the time, we was about 8 days we was on the front lines then. And then we got relieved and went back for kind of a little rest area and went back up again the next day, the next night. And then the next morning is when I got hit with shrapnel. That'd have been March 13th, I guess it was. Yeah, and then I got shot the 15th.
What was the reaction that your family had when they heard about all this?
See, I had a friend that I knew before we shipped overseas. I knew him in California, and he wound up in my outfit. He'd received the Navy Cross for Tarawa, and so he wrote a letter to my wife. I was in a hospital in Guam, man, and of course you can't write a laying down, and I couldn't sit up, and so Bob Toler was his name, and he wrote a letter to my wife and a letter to my folks and told them I'd been wounded, but I was okay. I was alive anyway. And so they knew it before the government ever notified them, see. And by him writing the letters for me.
Clay, how tough was it to deal with circumstances like you were put in where... You're leading other men, so you have that responsibility too. But you see some of these men get wounded and die. It's a difficult thing to have to go through.
Yeah, it is. But I tell you, Jim, you get to where you don't care for nothing. You just do it, and you know you're gonna run a chance of getting killed, and you just have to do the best you can. And that's what I did. I was responsible for those guys, but you can't just lead them by hand. They got to do some of the stuff themselves, you know what? Because I had, as I said, I had 12 guys the second time we went on the front lines, and I lost eight of them. I only had four left out of my squad. But that's the way it goes sometimes.
How tough is it to explain to people who aren't in circumstances like that? Me, for example, I wasn't in a circumstance like that. How do you explain to people how you keep your sanity when so much craziness is going around and your life is on the line every moment?
Yeah. Well, you get to where you don't care for nothing. Mm-hmm. It don't make any difference. You don't care. And you try to save the guys' lives that you can. Now, as I said, we had this sergeant, and I don't know where he came from, but he took over, and he wasn't supposed to even be our sergeant, because I was in charge of my squad, but he went and interrupted and sent him across this little field, and that's where this Bryson kid from Grant got killed, was going across that field. In fact, he was sending them right into a machine gun. And he told me to go across there, and I told him where to go in a hurry. I said, I'm not about to get... I didn't come on here to get killed. And I said, I'm not running across that field in front of a machine gun. And then our squad leader, as I said, he got shot through the arm. And I told him, I said, well, why don't you take this nut here? He went crazy. And I said, take this nut and go back to the first aid station, and maybe... you got a chance of getting off of this island alive. Mm-hmm. And then they stepped on that landmine going back across that little field, killed both of them. Mm-hmm. That's the report we got anyway. So, wasn't nothing any more you could do. You just have to do whatever you comes up.
Yeah. Well, you've had a lot of time to think about all these things, obviously, since that time. But have you ever, just wondered how come I made it and so many of the other guys I was around maybe didn't?
You wonder. You pray a lot. Mm-hmm. You just pray a lot and do the best you can. That's all you can do. And that's what I did. I was expecting to get killed. But like I told that sergeant, tried to get me to run across that field in that machine gun. I said, you're crazy. I come on here to get off alive. And I said, I'm not running into that machine gun. Mm-hmm. You got to protect yourself some too, you know. And so that's what I did, and I didn't know what I was going to make it or not. We had them Japs on the north end of the island. We had them in a pocket, and... had them surrounded, and they was throwing everything they had at us. And they was specialists with hand grenades, and them old hand grenades that they had a high charge at them, But they had to be pretty close to you if to kill you. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's what we had to contend with. But I got shot, though, with a 31 caliber. I know that's what it was. Mm-hmm. That's what they was using. Yeah. And
what was it like for you when it was all over?
You're just glad that you're alive. That's all. So I was thinking, God, that I made it. But I wound up in Guam. They flew us off of Iwo Jima to Guam, a bunch of us, the hospital down there. I had a cast on up, down on both legs to my knees, and then in my back and up under both arms and everything. And I had that, they put that on at Guam. Then they put us aboard a ship and brought us back to Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. Then from Pearl Harbor, I flew to Oakland, California. And then from there, I asked for a transfer to San Diego, and they gave it to me. Mm-hmm. So that's when I wound up in the hospital in San Diego. They said I weighed 110 pounds there. So.
Well, you've got a Purple Heart to show for it, and you also still have some shrapnel to show for it, too.
Yeah. Every once in a while, it gets in the wrong place, you know. You sit down, not as much as it used to, but I had a lot of bone fragments in there from a gunshot wound. And you sit down and fit. Is in the wrong position. The bone fragments, boy, you bounce right up.
Well, the medical care, both in the hospital and especially out in the field, was a lot different then than it is now.
Oh, yeah. I guess it was. Yeah. I don't know how it would be now, but I knew how it was then.
It's a little crude at times out in the when you're out in the field. Did you have an opportunity at all over the years to keep in touch with some of the guys that you served with?
There was a bunch of them from Wisconsin and Minnesota, and we'd get together and have a big party, you know, every 3 or 4 years, and we stayed pretty close together. And we visited up there, my wife and I visited them in their homes, and then they came here and visited us here, and we had a lot of good times, and I'll tell you, they're a good bunch of people.
Well, we appreciate everything they did. I can't imagine what the world would look like today had we'd not had people like you who stepped up and made that commitment so that we could continue to move forward in the fashion that we have. And I appreciate your time visiting with us here and sharing some stories.
I'm glad to do it.
Yeah. Well, and I do salute you for your service, too. We appreciate everything that you've done for us.
Thank you. It's just something you had to do, just another job.